IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.
Welcome. It is the Inside Lacrosse Women's Podcast. I am Matt Kinnear, joined by Hallie Quillinen. Hallie, we're kind of coming to each other from different parts of the country here. I'm out in the Midwest working on a story for the next issue of the magazine. You're live from New York, and we got a lot of women's lacrosse to talk about.
Yeah, no, I feel like you've had a few more exciting days than I have. It sounds like you've had quite the trip out there.
Definitely seeing what lacrosse is all about here at Marquette University. But let's shift to women's lacrosse and what's happened so far on this very young season. The season's still in its infancy, still a lot of lacrosse to be played, but right now it's been defined by a few upsets that I think have a lot of people talking in the women's lacrosse world. We'll start with what's happened in the CAA with two CAA teams knocking off some powerful, very highly ranked preseason teams. James Madison over North Carolina is the first, and in my opinion, the biggest upset that we've seen. 15-14, you know, this was an overtime game. Hallie, we talked about James Madison in our preseason podcast and about how they could be a very good team, and they proved it. They're 3-0 right now. They got that win over North Carolina. What did you see from them?
You know, JMU is a team that they play annually. They play North Carolina very early annually. Often it's a game, a season opener, and they play them close. So the fact that this game was close was not a surprise at all. It's just kind of always gotten away from the Duke, kind of as time ticked down. So one, I think what you saw here in this win is a veteran team that didn't want to let it get away and get out of their fingertips. You know, you look at, you know, you have, of course, Haley Warden, but then you have Kristen Gaudian and Alina Romesburg. You know, this is a team filled with juniors and seniors that want to not only make a run into the NCAA tournament, but a deep run. So I think that this is probably the most talented team I've seen James Madison field. Since I've been at Inside Lacrosse, probably when I played James Madison in college as well. And then, you know, you look at what they've been able to do since. You know, they have steadily climbed the ranks. You know, this year, this week in the polls, they were number six. But opening their season with that win over North Carolina, of course, that's a statement win. You know, we didn't see Maggie Bill in action. We haven't. I think North Carolina is very young. Of course, Marie McCool is leading the charge, but they're relying heavily on freshmen. You know, they're starting multiple freshmen. They're playing a lot of freshmen. So I think you saw a veteran team kind of take advantage of that in JMU, but North Carolina, I wouldn't even say down, you know, they were in that game. I think North Carolina's youth is learning a lot in the month of February, which is promising for the month ahead.
Speaking of that month ahead, I was just looking ahead at North Carolina's schedule. We'll talk about their game against Maryland in a little while, but they have Maryland. There's not a bad team left on their schedule. They have Maryland, then they have Florida, then Virginia, then Elon, then Northwestern, then Boston College, Virginia Tech, Notre Dame, Louisville, Syracuse, Canisius, and Duke. That's a rough three quarters of their lacrosse season that they still have to play.
And, you know, I mean, for North Carolina, I mean, you look at just like what you said, Maryland, Florida, Virginia, Elon, Northwestern, Boston College, they do not play a team that did not make the NCAA tournament until late March. They play, you know, there's three teams left on their schedule that didn't make the NCAA tournament. And Duke, if they weren't, you know, ineligible last year, in my opinion, would have gotten an at-large bid, you know, if they were over that 500 threshold. I think that that's why Jenny Levy's teams are so strong year in and year out. They schedule they play in the toughest conference, and they schedule, in my opinion, the toughest non-conference schedule. You know, they play Florida, they play Northwestern, they kept that Maryland rivalry game. So I think that type of schedule is incredibly beneficial for this team in particular. You know, I've seen, you know, Jamie Ortega is playing incredibly well. She's a freshman attacker. Ali Mastrogiani is starting in the midfield. You have Katie Hogue. You know, she was a reserve attacker last year as a freshman. This year, she's really stepped up in, you know, quarterbacking role alongside Ella Hazar. And I've really been impressed with the youth in this North Carolina team. And I think a lot of people after that JMU win were kind of wrongly they're saying, you know, North Carolina's down, North Carolina's out. That's disrespectful to North Carolina and JMU. You know, JMU is up, and North Carolina's right there. I think that they're just young and figuring some things out.
You mentioned Duke. Duke is kind of in the midst of trying to do a bounce-back season here, and they started off pretty well by beating Northwestern 9-8. Hallie, is Duke, you know, Duke has also beaten Elon and Campbell, both really dominant wins in those games, but the Northwestern, a one-goal win. Is Duke back?
Yeah, it's funny. Dave Vass asked that question in this week's takeaways. You know, I think Duke opening its season with a monster win over Elon, flexing their muscles there, followed it up with Campbell. I think Northwestern was their first true test. You know, this was a game where blows would be exchanged back and forth. I think Northwestern is back in a similar regard to the way Duke is. Both of these teams really wanted that win, and they were fighting to the final whistle. I think Charlotte North has been sensational. I think right now she is winning the Rookie of the Year race. Of course, she was the 2017 Under Armour All-American MVP, and she came in with, you know, a lot of pressure on her shoulders, and she's delivered for Duke. You know, for a freshman to step up and produce the way that she has, and she had a hat trick. Her third goal of the game proved to be the game winner for Northwestern. And then you look at what Olivia Jenner has done on the draw circle for this team, Maddie Crutchfield's leadership in the midfield, Gabby Cadu. She had, you know, in Northwestern's final offensive possession in this game, they had ample opportunity to score, but Cadu stood on her head, you know, three straight saves. I like this Duke team a lot. I think that this is, you know, not going to be the first win that's, you know, deemed a, quote, upset. I think Duke is really going to make waves in the ACC this year. And, you know, I think that they just have all of the intangibles you need. They have solid defensive play. They have a great goalkeeper in net. And they have star power. I think that's the thing that they were kind of missing last year. They had a lot of talent, but who was going to take it upon themselves? I love the way that, you know, Jenner's continued to assume leadership on the draw. Maddie Crutchfield in the mid, and Charlotte North, she's a special talent. Wherever she landed, you knew she was going to be able to step in and contribute right away. It's been incredible watching her step in and lead right away. You know, we're not talking about just a freshman. You know, we're talking about a freshman in February. You know, she's green, and she's playing so well for Duke right now.
Looking at Duke's roster, their top nine scorers this year are from eight different states. So Texas, New Jersey, Maryland, New Hampshire, New York, Georgia, Virginia, and California. So some pretty impressive geographical diversity for this Duke team as well, led by Charlotte North, who is from Dallas, Texas. 12 goals and one assist so far in three games, which is pretty incredible for a freshman.
Yeah, no, it's been impressive. And, you know, in that Northwestern win, they're playing a lot of underclassmen too. You know, Lesota's back, which for the Wildcats, that's huge. I like the play out of Ali Palermo. Claire Quinn's kind of moved into a midfield role. Northwestern, and we'll get to it, Northwestern has a big weekend ahead, in my opinion. You know, look at their three of their next four games, USC, Stony Brook, North Carolina. You know, we talk about North Carolina, Jenny Levy scheduling anyone and everyone she can to prepare her team for May. I think Kelly Monty-Hiller does that, maybe even a bit more. You know, her schedule every single year, it's scary. But this Northwestern team, I think, again, much like Duke, it's going to be a little bit of a more successful year, I think, in Evanston than it was last year.
Moving to Division II and a shootout in Division II, Florida Southern beats Adelphi 17-16, a rematch of the national championship game, but a much different story from the national championship game. Obviously, Florida Southern getting the win instead of Adelphi, but this score was just a vastly different contest than what we saw last May.
Yeah, and you know, I think that you know, I alluded to it a little bit in my Sunday post, and you know, I haven't had much pushback, so I think a lot of people agree. And it looks different because the game is different. You know, this year the D2 and D3 ranks have ushered in the possession clock, and of course they're playing with free movement too. So the game that I covered last year for the NCAA.com in Pennsylvania, it's vastly different. It's faster. You're forced to take offensive possessions rather than kind of slow the ball down and see what you can do with a little bit more of a deliberate pace. So when you look at last year's, I mean, the NCAA championship last year was 6-4. And you look at this shootout, just like you said, 17-16, back and forth. I thought that this game perfectly portrayed what you're going to see in the D2 and D3 ranks this year. You know, last year what I really saw out of Adelphi was that their defense was going to give offenses a lot of trouble this year because they were so strong last year, and they still bring back so much of that talented roster defensively. You know, the possession clock, I think a lot of people think fast offense, more goals. I don't think that there's been a rule passed in women's lacrosse in a long time that rewards defenses the way that a shot clock, a possession clock does. You know, you hold the team for 90 seconds and you get the ball back essentially. But, you know, I think that Adelphi is still working out the kinks defensively. Florida Southern at this time of the season, a bit more of a veteran team, and that's what we really saw. You know, I think you saw a Florida Southern team come out probably with a little bit of a vendetta from last year, a sour taste in their mouth in the national championship game a season ago. They came out guns blazing, you know, preseason midfielder of the year, reigning midfielder of the year, Emily Santoli. You know, she had a hat trick. She did all she could do and more, a couple of draws, a couple of ground balls. You know, you can't help but look at this Florida Southern team and think, championship weekend again. You know, Megan O'Brien, a goal and two assists. But if there's one player that truly impressed me last spring, and I think that she's started off this season on a tear, Dani Bursinger on the draw. And, you know, last year, 2 years ago, she was really a draw specialist for the box. And, you know, certainly she grabbed 10 of her own in this game, but she's flourished offensively last year and into this year. She led this game with 7 points, 5 goals, a pair of assists. I think that she's going to be the dark horse in the player of the year discussion alongside Santoli and O'Brien. I was really impressed with her in this game. And I think when you look at Florida Southern, I just can't for the two of them, you know, Adelphi and Florida Southern, I think that this could be a rematch of a match we potentially see championship weekend in the D2 ranks.
Going back to the other CAA victory that I alluded to earlier, Towson over Penn State, 14-13, a few weeks back. This one, I think, shocked a lot of people, maybe even more than the James Madison UNC game, because people really expect a lot out of Penn State this year, and this Towson win was just a shocker.
It was, you know, I think, and taking nothing away from Towson, last year I thought they lost steam at the end of the year. You know, a loss to Elon in the CAA tournament, but really it was that Notre Dame win, in my opinion, in 2017 that punched Towson's ticket to the NCAA tournament. But then an NCAA tournament opening loss to High Point, you know, 21-15. And that was a game that has probably been in the minds of these Towson Tigers ever since. And I think that they've opened their 2018 campaign with that as a huge motivating factor. You know, they just don't want to be in the discussion. They want to be the discussion. And they were, you know, JMU and Towson have been the talk of the town ever since. And I think Towson opening up, flexing its muscles with that 14-13 win over Penn State, has people talking and has Towson in the type of conversation they want to be in. It's crazy that we're talking about May and at-large bids, but I think, you know, last year and the year prior, really ever since we've seen this NCAA field expand, we have seen the last bubble team get in without a quality win. So when you're Towson and you're JMU, it's February, we're not getting ahead of ourselves. Even if you don't win the CAA with these wins, in my opinion, you get in to the NCAA tournament, you know, top four wins to open the season. And the fashion in which Towson did it, you know, Caitlin Maltabano is this team's, in my opinion, you know, preseason All-American. I think she's a do-it-all midfielder. And she had two assists in this matchup. I mean, when you look at the offensive firepower alongside of Maltabano, I think Towson and JMU look a lot alike on paper because of it. You know, Somonti with 6 points. Telecamp is back. She's healthy. She drops four. Caitlin Thornton, a rookie. You know, she was this year's rookie, this week's rookie of the week. She had a goal in this matchup, followed it up. Great performance against Georgetown. I think that this Towson is still a bit underrated. You know, I think JMU is getting love in the polls. I'd like to see Towson get a bit more respect. I'm excited to see what they do on, you know, with the rest of their schedule. They've got some big opportunities to keep chipping away. Stony Brook, Florida still remain. They have Loyola on there, Hopkins, of course, and of course the CAA slate, you know, a huge matchup. And I'm really actually very excited that they're closing the regular season this way. You know, they closed their CAA and their regular season with JMU. So I think that that's certainly a matchup people are circling already, but Towson, you know, I can't say enough good things about them. And Penn State, you know, I think they're just figuring it out. You know, again, I think that when there's an upset, people are so quick to write off the team that was upset. And like North Carolina, I think it's still super early. And Penn State's figuring it out. I think that Steph Lazo leaving is huge for this team. They're trying to figure out who's going to step up in her absence. And I've seen Madison Carter and Katie O'Donnell do just that. And I think, and importantly, they're trying to figure out what's going on in goal. You know, Madison Cunningham, Lucy Lowe, they're kind of, you know, splitting time. And I'm excited to see kind of who wins that battle. And you know, when you have a sophomore and freshman in goal, they just need to adjust. You know, Cunningham saw limited time a season ago. So she's kind of a freshman in that regard. So I think that their goalie battle and their opportunities left. Penn State, you know, they're not in the top 10 right now. They will be. You know, they're too good not to figure out these little things and move forward.
The next kind of segment here that we're doing is about some close calls. And we're going to stick with Penn State. They beat Lehigh 14-13, a one-goal game. Why was this game so close?
You know, it's interesting. I think weather plays a huge part in these matchups. Early season, I think that 14-13, it's kind of funny. Their game last week against Towson was 14-13, so it might have been a bit of deja vu. I think Lehigh is a team you can't overlook. And they put together the perfect game, and I don't think Penn State played the perfect game. Courtney Hedig, she stood on her head, you know, 7 points, 3 goals, 4 assists. She was really leading this team. You know, Samantha, I think it's Saggy, their goalie, you know, she's 16 saves. And I think when you're playing a hot goalie and, you know, you have an attacker that's kind of taking this game on her back, Penn State, you know, they saw it through, but they were challenged. And I think that that's really the most important thing was at the end of this game when Lehigh was making its comeback, the fact that Penn State was able to hold on and kind of get through this. You know, I think Madison Cunningham played great in goal. You know, she had 14 saves. And when you look at the way that Penn State was able to respond on the heels of an upset, I think that says a lot about Penn State and what you'll see out of them moving forward.
Going to College Park, the number one team in the country, the defending champs, the big bad Maryland Terrapins. They had a really, really key matchup, early season matchup against Florida. They won this 16-14. A close call, almost an upset. You know, it's a very, very good Florida team, so it wouldn't have been that shocking. But anytime you beat the Terps, it is. Maryland pulled this game out, showed a lot of toughness by winning this game. What did you see from them?
I thought you saw the stars show up for both teams. And really that was something that Dave Batts alluded to as well in his column this week. you know, the star power that Florida and Maryland possess year after year, and this year no different, is incredible. You know, the preseason and the reigning All-Americans that dot the line in this match, they showed up, and they showed exactly why they are. You know, Megan Whittle, 5 goals. She was given a ton of opportunities, kind of capitalizing on Florida's fouls. You know, Florida almost doubled up on Maryland in fouls, did double up plus that in the second half. And we really saw that in the beginning of the second half. Maryland's playmakers were dodging, they were drawing fouls, and they were capitalizing on their free position shots. You know, Megan Whittle, Jen Giles, both posting 5 points. This game, I feel like the Maryland Florida rivalry, it's always super close, and then Maryland pulls away, and Florida kind of digs themselves in this hole. But what I liked most in this matchup, one, Maryland is Maryland. You're going to have to play the perfect, cleanest game to beat them, because that's just how they play. And Florida wasn't there in the beginning of that second half, but Nadine Hadnagy, a Maryland alum, we talked about her a lot on this podcast last year. She's now on the Florida sidelines as their defensive coach. So, you know, when they called their timeout, it was neat to see Hadnagy pull her defense together, kind of get them all on the same page. And, you know, I'm interested to see what that message was to her team, because when you're watching this game, I think that she kind of gave them a little bit of the scoop, but most importantly, you know, had her defense buckle down, get out of shooting pace, stop fouling, stop going for the check. You know, they were calling it tight. So the way that her defense responded in this game, in the second half of the second half, almost won the game for Florida. You know, I think that their offense also started to turn it around, but to open the second half, 5 straight goals in that, you know, for less than a 4 minute span. And then for Florida to respond with 5 points, Sydney Parekh standing on her head, doing everything, causing turnovers, picking up draw controls, dishing out assists, scoring goals. You know, this was a game that could have gotten away from Florida. And Maryland did what they always do. They were taking advantage of what they were given. But Florida's response, I think that really shows a lot. And that's really why, in my opinion, Florida is a dangerous team. You know, this game last year got away from Florida. This game the year before got away from Florida. But the way that they responded, in my opinion, makes Florida, you know, just as dangerous as Stony Brook and Maryland.
And it does show you need to play absolutely perfect to beat the Maryland Terrapins. Moving over to the number 2 team, Stony Brook. They beat Stanford 15-9. Now, we have this as a close call. It's a 6-goal result. Doesn't exactly scream close call when you just look at the score. But this was a lot closer than this score dictated, wasn't it?
This was a close game. I don't know if Stony Brook had a bit of the California legs, or, you know, they ran into a Stanford team that was upset. Minded, but it was a pretty close game to begin with. You know, Ali Bayako registers the first goal, Kylie O'Miller, Murphy, Maggie Nick comes back. You know, I think that in the first, you know, 10, 15 minutes of this game, there were blows exchanged. And then Stony Brook, they were kind of running away with it, 10-2, but then Stanford kind of dominated, in my opinion. Stanford was the most impressive team in that second half. I think you saw the beginning of a very bright future for Ali Bayako and Stanford, and the Cardinals stepped up alongside of her. You know, I think that this is one of those games, you know, we just talked about Florida, Maryland. If this game had been going on for 10 more minutes, the result would have been very different. You know, I think Stanford kind of woke up in the second half and really outplayed Stony Brook. But then hats off to Kylie O'Miller. She had a quote quiet, you know, I think she still registered a few points against USC, but she had a pretty quiet game against USC. They were doubling her. They were sending all sorts of defensive schematics at her, and her younger sister, Taryn, and of course, Courtney Murphy stepped up. But in this game, when kind of, you know, Stony Brook needed it most, Kylie O'Miller did what she always does. She dropped 7 points, 6 goals and an assist. But hats off to Stanford. I think that this game really showed, you know, this team is 0-2 right now, but they're certainly not out. And Stanford showed a lot of fight against Stony Brook. They knew this was a big opportunity game. They did not go to the NCAA tournament last year. They were kind of in that discussion, but didn't have that quality win. So they were looking at this as that opportunity. Of course, they didn't get it, but I think they will. I am very excited to see what this Stanford team kind of continues to do, and what Bayako continues to do. I mean, she's a scorer. We saw her score a lot of goals in high school, and of course, kind of in the Under Armour All-America game, got a preview of what she can do alongside of a lot of marquee talent.
Next up is a preview of what's upcoming this weekend. Some really big ones, including two teams that we've talked about at length here in this podcast playing each other. But first, let's talk about USC's weekend, Friday and Sunday. Friday, Notre Dame versus USC. Sunday, Northwestern versus USC. That is a pretty strong three-day stretch there.
About as strong as you can get. You know, that's a tough trip. You know, hats off to USC and really all the teams on the West Coast. You know, their travel, that takes a toll on you. You know, being on a plane and having to get off and respond with two top 20 wins. I mean, this is going to be a big weekend, but I like the way that Coach Monday and her staff schedules this weekend. This is going to be very similar to an NCAA type scenario, where, you know, if USC doesn't host in the first weekend and they're traveling, they are going to travel and play two quality opponents on a Friday-Sunday swing. So I like that the way that they scheduled this. You know, Notre Dame, I think, is a team with a lot to prove. They're very young. They want to be in the conversation, and they're going to look at this like a huge opportunity. Same with Northwestern. Northwestern wants to grab that big top 10 win. So I think Notre Dame, Northwestern, they're hungry. They're ready for USC to come to town. And I'm excited to see how USC responds. You know, they open the season with a big win over Virginia Tech. They have a disappointing outcome versus Stony Brook. Kerrigan Miller had two yellow cards in the first half. She didn't play the majority of that Stony Brook game. When you have your best player sidelined and still managed to be within four of what many are voting Stony Brook as the number one team in the country right now, I think that USC certainly disappointed with that Stony Brook game. Kerrigan Miller, 100% disappointed, having to watch that play out from the sidelines. I think that you're going to see a very motivated USC team try to grab big top 20 wins this weekend. And two games that could go either way. I think that these are pretty evenly matched matchups. And I'm excited to see how this weekend tilt for USC coming to the Midwest unfolds.
Then the kind of traditional rivalry of top teams, teams that meet in the national championship, teams that, you know, when you associate women's lacrosse, you associate with these two teams, and that's North Carolina and Maryland, the big game of this weekend. We've talked about both of these teams, but Hallie, given that, you know, North Carolina has the loss, do you think that they have what it takes to give Maryland a run here?
Oh, 100%. You know, I think what we saw in Maryland this last weekend, they're very young. They're still figuring things out. You know, I think defensively, especially, Maryland is trying to work through the kinks, find out who their leader is. Julia Bragg had two yellow cards, and she was sidelined in that Florida game. So I think that both Maryland and North Carolina look a little different than they have in years past, and that they don't have the big-name vets kind of leading the charge all over the field. You know, certainly does this game have big names? Yeah, Megan Whittle versus Marie McCool in what could be their final matchup. I mean, they were the nation's number one and number two incomers 4 years ago. So I think that this game, it's the most exciting matchup in women's lacrosse. And it has been for the last 4 or 5 years now, ever since, you know, the Sammy Joe Tracy overtime thriller. So I think this game is going to be what it's always been, which is a must see. Obviously, if you're not able to be there in person, you know, it's a game that people will be watching from all over, tuning in. And I really think it could go either way. I think North Carolina, especially after that JMU loss, they're looking for an opportunity. They're looking for a statement to really not only let people know, but to prove to themselves that they are still what they've always been. And Maryland, of course, probably not too happy with the way that that Florida game closed. They let Florida get back in the game, claw their way back, five straight goals they couldn't have an answer to. So I think that both of these teams coming in, I like that they still have this matchup. Of course, I wish it, you know, I wish that they could play in the same conference because I'd love to see these teams play two, maybe three times a year. But I love that they still have this early season matchup and I'm excited. I mean, it certainly could go either way. And I think that this is a must win for North Carolina if they want to get back in that top five discussion. They don't really have a ton of opportunities to get back in that discussion on their schedule other than this Maryland game.
Definitely a must watch. And Hallie, we've got some new blood in the mix this weekend with Megan going to be kind of handling the Sunday Post for us for IO Women. So all the readers can look forward to that. Megan is very in tune to the lacrosse landscape and recently was a coach and did some coverage for the IWLCA meetings in November. So the site is in good hands this weekend for you, Hallie.
Absolutely. I always hate to step away. I mean, I feel like I'll still be watching. I mean, even I'll still be watching. I'm going to be at a wedding shower this weekend, and I feel like under the table, I'll probably have the Florida-North Carolina game going on my phone. But I'm excited for Megan. I mean, she's just been such a great addition to the IL team. She was on site at the IL Women Indoor National Championships, of course, on site for the IWLCA annual meeting. She's been a great addition to the team, and I'm excited to see, you know, her analysis and the takes that she has coming out of what's undoubtedly going to be a fun weekend spanning all three divisions.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.